All right, let's get started. Wonderful. Hi, everyone. So welcome to Unity with the Best. I'm the first guy today to talk about WebGL and Unity, why we were one of the first company in the world to actually have a AAA looking WebGL game out there and commercially ready. So who am I? I've been doing free-to-play games for the last 7 years. I co-founded a company called Kobojo, which raised $7.5 million. We grew quite high in France, and we were called the French Singer. I left in 2012 and moved to Poland, where I co-founded another company called Everyday Play, which this time was focused on mid-core games. And we released two games, Vikings Gone Wild, which was kind of the first Clash of Clans on Facebook and did extremely well for us. And more recently, Rose of Aragon, which just was rewarded with Best Social Game at Game Connection Development Awards a week ago. So pretty proud. So why WebGL was so important for us? The answer is because, as I just mentioned, Vikings Gone Wild at Everyday Play was, as from a business perspective, a fast follow of Clash of Clans on Facebook. So we have been a very strongly web-driven video game company. And when we launched the game in 2013, we actually launched it on Flash and Unity Web Player. We got over 3 million registered users, and a year later we launched on iOS and Android. The game has been a very successful game for us so far. And it goes so well that in June 2014, the company grew to 12 people, and we started to work on Heroes of Paragon. In the same genre, and we actually grew to 22 employees. But something happened. In April 2015, basically kills the NP API. Missing a P here. What is the NP API? Well, the NP API is actually as old as the internet and is the technology behind Java, behind Silverlight, and it turns out also the technology behind Unity Web Player. So it impacts immensely, actually, a lot of people out there. And it impacts Ubisoft by Kings Gone Wild. At the time, we actually had 70% of our users were on Chrome. So we managed to get a lot of them to move to Firefox. And actually, Chrome at the time still had a way to re-enable it if you really wanted to. But we had to shut down our plans to launch Heroes of Paragon on the web without the Unity Web Player and without any Flash support anymore from Unity. It was a terrible idea. So we decided to basically launch only Heroes of Paragon on mobile. We become officially a mobile gaming game. We need a solution. We need to look at something. And obviously, we have all heard of this WebGL stuff. It's an announcement when they kill Flash and WebGL is coming. So January 2015, way before this April terrible moment for us. We obviously get our hands on Unity 5.0 beta. We export the game into this thing. There's some compilation error, but we get it to run, and it is a disaster. At the time, literally, the browser would just crash during the JavaScript parsing phase. So I mean, most of the time, the game was not even launching, and worse than that, the browser was dying. On 64-bit browser, it was passing the parsing phase, but we had like 2-3 frames per second. It was absolutely awful. The .js file was absolutely humongous, 60 megabytes uncompressed. You see, you know, we did not even try to compress it because there were so many issues with it. So at this point, you know, and obviously in April 2015, when Chrome officially killed this thing, we give it another shot, but it didn't work out. So we cannot really officially become a mobile company, you know. We had no choice. And it kind of sucks because from a business perspective, as a video game entrepreneur, the tie we have with platform is very important because, you know, user acquisition is very expensive recently. So being close to a platform means featurings, means free, means organic traffic, and that was not a good news. So the breakthrough came in October 2015. And as I mentioned, Facebook is the strongest platform we have a tie with. And you know, I come to her name is AJ at the time. She's my account manager at Facebook. And like, AJ, you know, we're launching Heroes of Paragon. Could you guys feature it? I said, but you guys are on mobile. You don't have a canvas. I said, we don't because, you know, it doesn't work. I said, you need to try it again. We're working on this thing. And so she pushes it. And as you have read now that I'm speaking, we tried this 5.2.1 Unity, and holy crap, it works. And it works great. We're talking about 30 frames per second out of the box for 3D games. Now, it was not perfect. Literally, the game was crashing after 2 minutes, or 1 to 2 minutes, completely random. And looking at, you know, the looking at what was going on the on from a memory point of view, there was a massive memory leak going on. So, but we were fortunate that Facebook actually introduced us to Mozilla team, to the Unity team, and we actually start to tackle Everyday Play and the three other companies to start to tackle these things. Also, they are like really impressed with the visual quality of Heroes of Paragon. While I'm chatting, just go on Facebook, type Heroes of Paragon, and check out the game. It's full 3D WebGL. So, thanks to them, we actually managed to fix the bug of this memory leak was actually a part of in Unity and part on the browser. They fixed both of it. They gave us a short-term thing, basically using a different library on Unity at the time, and we actually have something that is worth our time. So good that we actually decide to move on and port this game. We actually pushed the launch date by a month and decide to port it. So I'm going to go through everything we've learned and all the issue we've had to try to basically get this game to be fully ported and working, knowing that the game at the time was an iOS and Android game. So the first thing is subject. Basically, you know, the WebGL version does not support socket, and we were not using HTTP at the time. We're actually using raw sockets. What we're doing to share the best practice is that we have our own server on port 80. So it doesn't require any fancy ports. So it still goes through port 80, but it's not an HTTP server at the back. It's our own TCP/IP server, and we actually use raw socket. It's very efficient because it means that it works pretty much everywhere a browser will work, but we don't have the overhead of HTTP, the overhead of an HTTP connection with its own handshake and stuff like that. However, because it was not HTTP, we need to figure this out. We installed on the server something called Sockify. The way it works is very simple. It basically encapsulates a TCP/IP call into an HTTP call. Push it over the web, and WebSockify is an HTTP server that will look into it, unwrap it, and then connect to our own TCP/IP server. So, and surprisingly, this was really easy to put together. There was very little issue with it, especially because, as I'm going to show you right now, this WebSocket library came straight out of the box of Unity. So you can see I was just from using a socket to a web socket, there was very little code change. And you can read, I'll send you my slide obviously after that so you don't have, or maybe you can take a screenshot. But we actually were capable of keeping both versions with a simple pre-compilation macro. And yeah, that's really self-explanatory here. So raw socket, really easy to handle. Another one which we had to tackle was the fact that there are no thread supports, and that can be tricky depending on what is done. On our side, there was obviously the game logic. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer when you have your own game logic to make it run on a separate thread so that you're not cluttering, you know, the Unity main threads that's used for rendering for stuff. So basically, while it's rendering, you're still working on your game logic or maybe the game logic of your next frame extractor. So here we had to remove that thread, which led to some performance, obviously to some, you know, we had to go further down to improve that thread because that game logic, because now it was not threaded. So it was adding to the frame rendering. So, and we had some issue with pathfinding. I'm not sure issue, but performance that we had to work and decouple. Another classical thread, obviously, is the networks thread. Generally here, it's fairly simple. generally you have a thread because you have a blocking socket waiting for an execution to come in and just swallow whatever it has to come out of that pipeline, treat it. So here the idea was to remove that blocking socket and every update to check for something to consume on the WebSocket output. Again, nothing too tricky here. So that's a tricky one. Obviously, you have to remove everything, and I'll talk about bundles about a bit later, but we had the thread, which was a thread of bundle loading. You know, the idea is that in any platform, you probably don't want your, you know, especially on mobile, with the 50 megabyte or 100 megabyte limitation, we already add a bundle model for downloading our assets. And obviously this stuff sits very nicely on a thread. So, but this is what happened here. Basically the stuff, you know, the browser is like, oh, I haven't heard back, you know, I haven't heard back from that JavaScript for quite a while. It might be dead or in a dead loop. Do you want me to kill this thing? This is not good. So what we have to do here is actually spread each bundle deserialization on a different frame in order for the browser to kind of high-five for Unity to be able to high-five every frame. Hey, I'm right here. Don't kill me. I'm okay. And I'm just, you know, hey. Same story with custom file in Heroes of Paragon. Obviously, we have a lot of not only assets, but we have some kind of custom file that contain like game data, stats, stuff like that. And so same story here. We had to, you know, spread the deserialization of sometimes fairly large text file, you know, containing hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands actually of line entry of data on a separate frame just to let it breathe. And that works pretty well. rendering optimization. So the basic performance were already good for a basic village, but as soon as we would have like really large armies or village, this stuff would start to struggle pretty bad, and on lower PCs it would start to be really bad. So we had to do things here. Like, we couldn't just fully rely on Unity optimization. And so what we came up with, actually, when I say we, it's actually Martin, our CTO. What he did is that he did a custom batching. To get technical, the idea is that you have kind of two ways to do it. You have static batching and dynamic batching. First of all, the existing dynamic batching that Unity was doing was not great. It was missing a lot of things. It was like shadows were not batched properly, building were not batched properly. And the truth is that we knew exactly in which way what should be done. And some of the thing could probably be statically batched, but could not, because those building also had to be exploded and be removed after. So the idea of a custom batching is to have the best of both worlds, static batching and dynamic batching. The idea is that we take everything that is static at a given time. Let's say, so in our case, we're talking about a base versus base battle. So we have cities on both sides. And all this building, except for the moving parts, can be static batched. So we take all those guys and we just make one fat mesh out of all this thing. and basically, if any of this extra building has to explode or be removed, we will dynamically recompute that static mesh one more time. So it's kind of basically a dynamic static batch, and that saved a lot of CPU, because all those guys that were all going through dynamic batching, there's two things about dynamic batching. It's actually quite costly. I mean, to decide what goes first and what, it's over CPU. So it really is a lot of CPU consumption. And obviously, in terms of rendering, we're now talking about something that's already sorted. So that was a big win. Another one was also that we also add custom dynamics. So the idea is that we would basically tell to Unity what should be rendered in which order, and that was also a big win. So that was a major articulation of frame per second saving here. Something actually that was true when I wrote this presentation in December, and not so much today in March, but player preferences were not working over Firefox, or some older, basically some older browser. So what we were doing is that we actually add our own abstraction over JavaScript to use the local storage capacity instead of this IndexedDB, which I think is used for player preferences by Unity. Only issue is that in Chromium or some like kind of paranoiac browser when it comes to security, basically the Chromium would not give us access to local storage just like that. In some cases, but normally today you can probably use the player preferences of Unity without much trouble. We also had at the time some issue with music, and the music was basically speeding and slowing down as we were scrolling the game, so it was kind of a DJ time. There have been back and forth issue with music recently. There is some issue with music again with the latest Firefox. We have been talking with them. We know it's fixed in the current nightly build of Firefox, so fix is coming. But overall, now it's fixed. It works properly on Chrome. It works properly on Edge, and on some version of Firefox it works, some it doesn't. But overall, music works pretty well. Obviously, you need to use MP3 here so that it's actually streamed and not downloaded. Obviously, we're talking about the web as well, so it's perfect format for that. Pre-memory allocation. So the idea is that the browser kind of need to pre-allocate the memory that you will need to basically run this game, and you kind of need to tell how much you actually want to pre-allocate. And so the way it works is that you need to put a number, and the number that is recommended is 512 megabytes. But for us, 512 megabytes was too short. After 15 minutes of playing, we would have some issue with it. The browser basically was saying that basically could not allocate memory anymore. We were in the rush, and we only had like a week and a half before this launch on the 3rd of December, because it was such a late decision to do this. So we had to play and go above the recommended value. So we kind of played back and forth, and we put this 718 megabytes, and it failed. It failed because what happened is that if you put a number that's too high, well, you get this message: the browser could not allocate enough memory for the WebGL content. So this time it's actually the brother who's like, dude, this is way too much. Sorry, I can't do it for you. Obviously, this will show up a lot more on 32-bit brother, or actually maybe even only on 32-bit brothers. I don't remember the detail of this thing. So the sweet spot for us was we put it to 600 megabytes. You need to know that still some 32-bit brother will cap it to 512. But for most places, 600 megabytes was our sweet spot. But you really need to play with this. I would recommend to keep it to 512, unless one day your project like officially runs out of memory. If it does, then if you have some time ahead, just look at what's going on. Sometimes there are some very obvious memory issue. And actually, we found 2 months after, we found why we had this issue, which I can share with you right now. We had a single Unity scene, and we were going between some kind of edit mode scene where you basically manage a village to some kind of a battle scene where you would actually actively fight against another player. And on a previous game, Vikings Gone Wild, going in this transition of gameplay would actually go between two different scenes. And Unity will basically, you know, if you've worked with Unity long enough, you will see that it basically clean up your unused object for you as soon as you change scene and open a new scene. Well, if you have a single scene, obviously Unity is never going to do it for you. We were very careful, obviously, to clean up memory. We were tracing, you know, some kind of a dead memory link, most likely generally happening because you have not detached an event, you know, from a class to another, and so that this class stays in memory because it's still attached, waiting for an event to come up, etc. So all this was clear, but what we forgot to do was to manually trigger the basically cleanup of unused object, and that was the source of a memory leak. So it's not a huge memory leak, but it just kept growing as we kept having more and more stuff in memory. And just running this simple line of code between the edit mode transition and the fights mode transition fixed Amore stuff. So obviously, if your Unity project is a mobile stuff, it's kind of nice that you have this resource folder that's kind of, you know, onboard everything with you, especially if you're like this, you know, it's a small project, a 50 megabyte project, maybe you don't even have to think about bundles and stuff like that. On the web, you can just simply cannot do that. What's going to happen is that everything in the resource folder is going to be pre-downloaded with the JavaScript before anything is shown. So if you have 25 megabytes of resources in your resource folder, there's going to be 25 megabytes downloaded alongside a big fat JavaScript that hopefully is zipped, but it's going to make your first time user experience on the web absolutely awful. You cannot put anything in your resource folder if you move from mobile to WebGL with Unity. So you need to start working with bundle. The good news is that bundles have greatly improved in the last year and a half, and Unity 5 have introduced like a proper way to deal with them, to basically manage what is in each of them, etc. It requires an extra layer of logic from your side, but it's very important. I've been making web games for quite a while, and there is clearly a pattern of best practice that showed up, which is if your initial game can be less than 5 megabytes, you probably keep 90% of those people, maybe even 92-93% of those people through download, and every megabyte above 5 megabytes will just shrink the number of people who just simply will wait to even watch your game. So if you have, like, let's say a 40 megabytes first time download before the guy can play, this will work on mobile because the guy can just turn it on, put it in his pocket. But on the web, the behavior of players and users is very different, and you need to be reactive. So the best practice is to download bundles only on the go, whatever is needed. And also the cache is limited. You know, you might want to download everything right now, but if the guy just clean up his cache, next time he comes, he has to re-download everything again. So best practices is nothing in the resource folder, and kind of stream every single bundle onto use on the go. In terms of bundles download, also avoid this load from cache or download. Turns out that, so at the time, our major memory leak was coming from this guy. And it turned out by just using just the most basic WW download, it works the same way because the caching is done at the browser level. So it doesn't have to be on the index, index DB of the browser. But the story is that now they have fixed this memory leak, so you could still use it. But it turns out this, because of the caching, the decompression of the bundle and the extra memory use makes it an absolutely unworthy method to use. And we still use to this day the classic WW method to download things, and it's working great for us. So you might want to pass on this guy. Two more things to talk about. This one was kind of silly, and it can happen with in many ways. The full screen button we had, so basically with this full screen button on our Unity canvas, And because it was passing down an event that was like go full screen, for some reason the mouse up event was swallowed up. It was just not passed down to the browser. So a stupid workaround that if you need to put a full screen button that needs to act on the browser, just put it on mouse down. That fixed it for us. Now, that's the last pickle, and a big one is debugging. So if you read a little bit what Unity has to say about it, we still have a long way to go. I mean, the truth is, it's very easy to comprehend why. The way this works is that they create one big fat JavaScript. And in general, browsers were just never equipped to have like, you know, a 60, 70 megabyte JavaScript that is completely so unhuman to parse and read. That's, so debugging was just never meant to be working well with such a fat thing. Hopefully, this is more on the browser side than Unity side, obviously, but hopefully with 2016 and such a strong effort put on the technology, we'll have a better light ahead of us. So there are a couple of good news. There's still the console, and welcome back to some kind of old ages where, you know, you can basically, debug, console.debug as much information as you can to try to figure out where this stuff is happening. So that's one way, but when sometimes you really need to know what's going on, one way to do it is to open the file in Sublime Text. By the way, we tried many editors, and there was only Sublime that was capable of opening our JavaScript file without dying or like hanging forever. And if you're in debug mode, you can basically look for your function name and add alerts within the function. So basically giving you the capacity to kind of debug, where is this guy at, etc. And this is a really ugly way, but that actually worked for us in some of the trickiest issue we had to debug when this stuff crashes and you don't really know where it is crashing. You add a bunch of console, it's not helping, and having this alert to it kind of breakthrough in a sense somewhere. That was very useful. Very ugly, though. So some commercial data, because we've been talking about some of the technical issue we run through, which, as you can read, they were not that big. I mean, threads, downloadability, in WebSocket, threads, we're talking about memory, we're talking about the browser, letting the browser breathe and when you cover your thread. So it's not that much. So we actually launched the game at the same time on iOS, Android, and WebGL on Facebook. And so I wanted to share with you what came out in terms of how did WebGL do compared to iOS and Android, which are such native and well-addressed markets. This was day one ARPDU. The number changed a little bit over time. Obviously, we had a very high ARPDU at the time. ARPDU, for those who don't know, it's average revenue per daily active user. It's the money you make today divided by the number of people. And 60 cents ARPDU is really high. And so surprisingly, WebGL made more money per user on launch day than both other platforms almost combined, which was quite surprising. And we were very grateful that Facebook really pushed us to go there. The one thing where WebGL is at the bottom is retention. Retention D1 means that how many people came back the next day. So, let's say that you have, 1,000 people that came yesterday on the game, and how many people came back today. This is our D1 retention. And it's a very important metric in free-to-play games that tells us how many people did we lose during that first experience, and how many, it could be technical loss, it can be just because the game is not fun or because the game is too hard. No matter what it is, this D1 is a very important thing. So D1, 27% is obviously at the bottom of the stack. Some of the issue we had during launch day was basically people on Windows XP, people with old browser, people with Internet Explorer, all those people did not manage to access our game. We addressed that by launching a hybrid version of WebGL and the web player. Obviously, so that web player doesn't work on Chrome, but if you are on Internet Explorer, for example, well, it's better that we put you on, you know, that we offer you one solution, which is if you have Unity, you play on Unity Web Player rather than nothing, because Internet Explorer does not support WebGL. So, and this really helps. But obviously, you know, it's hard to compete against iOS, which has like, you know, what's a handful of device and, you know, it's native code and it works better. However, 30% D1 is still a very decent number. We're not talking about 15, 20, like something awful. Like below 20%, this will be garbage. 30%, it's still a very reasonable and commercial ready numbers. So that's really good news. And so, you know, so I really encourage if you guys do WebGL to do this hybrid WebGL web player. There are many things coming up, and we're talking about WebAssembly. The WebAssembly basically is going to bring the capacity to have pre-compiled code that runs in the browser. So it brings two things. It brings the fact that actually we will not need JavaScript anymore, because we will, you know, Unity will be able to convert immediately C# to CPP and CPP to a WebAssembly. So you'll be able to code C++ code and run it technically in the browser. It will make also parsing faster and the whole thing downloadable much smaller. So that's my conclusion. It's really good news coming up, like being a browser-based company the way we are at Everyday Play. We literally freaked out last year, and it's really reassuring to see that there is a solution now, that actually this technology, more than being technically ready, is commercially ready and makes money. So thank you so much, guys, for listening to this story, and I hope you learned some stuff. And I'm gonna alt tab and check what are your questions. Okay, so how protect WebGL game from cheater? This question of how can you protect your source code from cheaters or even from just from people to decompile it is something that exists for years, even for Flash. And it's something that we had to tackle on the web for a long time. Best way to do it is to basically encrypt in memory most of your most important variables. How do you encrypt in memory your most important variables? So, for example, an important variable in a game will be the amount of gold that the guy has. The way they cheat is that they look through the process of that page, and let's say that you have, I don't know, 1,236 gold. They look for the number 1,236 gold integer entry in memory. They might find 10. They will spend something. It become 1,206. They refine from the early search that had 236 match to the 2,206, and boom, they find one. And therefore, they have found the place in memory that if they actually change that number, boom, they have 3 million gold in your in memory in the game. So two things to avoid that. Obviously, the first one and the most robust one is to have a server-side validation, especially for Flash. And WebGL is the same thing. Like WebGL does not introduce any new issue because it's JavaScript. Flash had the same issue. So anything crucial for your business needs to be validated on the server side. It needs to, you know, you can have a smooth, you know, when on my game, when you click on this thing and buy it, I'm not waiting for a handshake from the server to tell me that, yeah, it's fine, you had it. So I let you go through. It felt like it was instantaneous, but asynchronously, every 2-3 click or every minute, I'm batching every action you made, and I try to validate on server if they are valid. If they are not, I will push you out, and I will tell you you're a cheater. If they are valid, then I let you keep going. On what platform and in what language was your game originally developed? So it was developed with Unity, originally developed for iOS and Android, and it was developed in C#. Are you using Unity ads in the game? So we are not, because we are, the type of game we do are fully in-app purchased, monetized. Our games are kind of hardcore-ish, And for this population, it makes little sense to have ads. We prefer to have a higher quality experience with no advertisement and a better conversion rate as in-app purchase. So I do not know how Unity ads works on WebGL. Do I hire it every day? But for now, we do not. But thank you very much. It's a very kind question. Did you manage to reduce the JavaScript lib size any more than default options? Yes. So there is a little bit of literature on the web on these things. Turns out that, for example, enums are not very well optimized when it comes to code. So we're talking to the guys at Nordeus. They are a very successful online company. And they were sharing that actually one big optimization of their JavaScript output was to remove all their enum. And they had a load of enum, which enum sounds is very elegant, right? But it turns out when it comes to optimization of size and compilation, it was not a good thing. But ultimately, I would recommend to read a lot of things. One thing to be careful with is to make sure that you send a zip file. What we do is that we enabled this streaming zipping on demand. That if your browser supports it and if the server does, obviously your server does, well, then this JavaScript is actually downloaded in a zipped way. And so typically right now, Heroes of Paragon JavaScript, I think, is around 40 megabytes, something like this, but it zips into, I think, a 7 megabyte file. So it's a much more reasonable size. So you basically always assume that the client is compromised and double check all logic on server and end. Yes, absolutely. Do you check end client and server always? Yes, absolutely. In the world of video games, we will have cheaters no matter what. Actually, it's part of the game, right? A game is about you need to win that game, and actually there's a lot of literature that actually cheating is just another way to win the game and a perfectly logic way. So we have a lot of cheaters. So you never assume that the client is safe. The other thing, just to complete with this, because I did not finish, the other way to ensure client side is not act too much either. So basically what we do is that we take that integer, which if you don't do anything with it, is very easily foundable in memory, and we hash it. So for example, we would do a bit move or like convert it into a text or like divide it by a certain number, like basically just hide the number that the guy can see, and the numbers are the form in the one it's stored in memory. And that's a very efficient way to do it. Is WebGL limited to 30 frames per second? What other major permutations are there? No, it's not. Actually, right now we have on the good machine, if you open Heroes of Paragon, we go up to 60 frames per second, no problem. And especially at the beginning of the game where there's not too much going on. Any other major performance limitation are there? No, I mean, the truth is WebGL is right now kind of as close as a PC game can be. So you have the goodies that kind of, you know, mobile games don't have in terms of GPU, CPU. I mean, we're using the freaking GPU of a PC. So in many ways, WebGL can have better performance today than your iOS version when it comes to pretty 3D rendering. And the progress that Mozilla and the community has put on this thing in terms of performance is amazing. Do you have any external web links in the game that user can click on? If so, do you open them in a new page or have some sort of web view within the game? So we do not have web views because having web views cross-platform with Unity is kind of tricky. We wanted to do that, and if our project was solely WebGL, it would be a no-brainer. But because we're Unity, Android, WebGL, and we have port on Microsoft, etc., we don't do it. For the web, basically, we'll open a new tab. It's just order to the browser, please run this thing, and the default behavior of the browser to open a new tab. Do you have a blog where we can get some best performance tips and ask more questions? I do. Actually, what I can do is probably leave you my email. I just posted recently more business-oriented results of comparing WebGL versus iOS and Android as a platform to commercialize the game. But you can find a lot of literature on the web today on this, and I'm happy to point it to you. To what extent do you think you should support all the browser? Okay, here's what I can tell you about supporting all the browser. And I'm guessing you're talking about having a web player export. We saw an improvement about of 4 to 5% D1. I'd say it's a very small effort for this to happen, and I would highly recommend it to just have this extra percent. You know, every percent for D1 above the fold is a percent that is good to have. Do you do testing, unit testing, more level of ones for a game? If so, do you use some framework or your own solution? So the only unit testing we do, and we do have some, are just server-side based code. So basically all the logic. At Everyday Play, we have a very strict unity and logic coding separation. So all our game logic is full coded in Visual Studio, has no tie whatsoever with the Unity library at all. And basically, it communicates with the Unity framework through a bunch of events. So basically, all that logic for us is unit tested on a nightly build. We do not use client-side testing. So we use something, it's called Testronic. And typically, we use it more to test compatibility on as many devices as possible, for example, for Android. What we do is that we just encode all the clicks necessary to do the tutorial. And we run that tutorial on as many Android devices as possible to see how it works. So Testronic is what we use. You talk a little bit more about garbage collection, any pointers or any block linked to a .NET web developer going in Unity. The biggest thing is to make sure that when you register an event, unregister that event. It's most of the time the biggest thing. We actually wrote internally a small tool to help us figure out when things were not detached, to kind of prevent this kind of memory here. But you know, any garbage collection lecture you'll find on the web will apply to Unity. Web shell memory size is in publishing settings. Here's what you want to do when it comes to iOS and Android. You with Unity, you want native iOS outputs for your iOS. You want to have a native Android output for your Android, and you want to have a native WebGL output for the web. We tried, and actually on some device, surprisingly, it works-ish, but it's obviously not supported. And WebGL is not supported on iOS, for sure. When coding in Unity, should I go with a CPP mindset for performance, or should I think that I'm going with a C# perspective? Definitely C++. But you know, a great programmer, the guy who wrote Doom, says, you know, any early optimization is source of all evils. And it's kind of true. So having spent literally months optimizing Viking Zone Wild for it to run on an iPhone 4, for example, we can talk a lot about performance. For example, for each, very elegant, very inefficient. Like, it all depends how performance intensive is what you're about to embark. Like, you know, for example, Heroes of Paragon was very performance intensive. Like, we're talking about up to 100 3D units fighting each other with like up to like 70 buildings, a huge environment, and on top of that, you know, pathfinding, you know, battling. And so in such environment, you might, straight from the beginning, you want to avoid enums, you want to avoid forage, you want to do a 4i rather than a forage. You don't want to use, you know, any kind of encapsulation or like, you know, kind of magic thing that is wrapped up by Unity. You want to be as low as possible if your game really requires performances. If your game is a kind of a simple 2D scroller game with not too much going on, not too many sprites, then you probably don't need to worry, and C# will just do the job great. But if you really want to support really low-end devices for Android or even for WebGL, then you might want immediately to kind of have like a C++ approach in things, for sure. In terms of garbage collection, however, no. The only thing, think about cleaning your event. And also don't forget to call this unused object if you don't have any scene transition, as I called earlier. So I think we're about to wrap up, guys. So thank you so much for attending. I really hope you got some value out of this thing. I can just share with you one last thing, which is Gamma Sutra blog post that I wrote about WebGL, and kind of going a bit further in terms of KPIs. Here you go. Thank you, guys. Have a take a small break before the next one, and talk to you later. Bye bye.